The issue is that the minute you use humanitarians, missionaries as your cover, you put them in danger. And the worst
part is...
Missionaries in danger. And the worst is the people who were doing the work had no idea.
I want to thank you both for being with us. A fascinating hour. We're going to continue this discussion after the broadcast and post online at democracynow.org, particularly looking at Yemen and Somalia, the drone strikes. Jeremy Scahill, Matthew Cole, thanks so much for joining us both with The Intercept. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths on Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center in Portland. The film will be introduced by Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There will also be a Q&A session after the film. Again, that's a screening of the film, Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths with Richard Gage, Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Tim DeChristopher Lecture, Wielding the Power of Vulnerability, Thursday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Tim DeChristopher, as bidder 70, disrupted a Bureau of Land Management oil and gas auction in 2008 by outbidding oil companies for land parcels around Arches and Canyonlands National Parks in Utah. His actions led to a 21-month imprisonment. Again, that's a lecture by Tim DeChristopher titled Wielding the Power of Vulnerability, Thursday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
5:01 p.m., this is KBOO Portland. And right here at KABU, we want to let you know we have a dynamic community of 500 volunteers who keep this station running. There's a great variety of things to do right here for all interests, and KABU offers training in radio production, voice and microphone skills, audio editing, and field recording for volunteers who have attended volunteer orientation and commit to volunteering to fill station needs. So do you have what it takes to get involved, and do you want to get involved? I'm sure that you do. Contact Ani, the volunteer coordinator. Her email address is volunteer@kabu.org, or you can call her at 503-231-8032, extension 213. And coming up right now is your KABU Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
I've never contributed to a campaign or voted in the primaries, but I've donated to Bernie's campaign 5 times. If you know who I'm voting for in May 17, and I know who you're voting for in May 17.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, thousands turn out for Bernie Sanders in Portland.
Lane County has 24-hour law enforcement coverage by its sheriff's department for the first time since 2014.
And President Obama says he's really going to close the Guantanamo Bay prison this time.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Friday, March the 25th, 2016. I'm Les Hudson.
And I'm Linda Olson-Osterlin. Bernie Sanders brought his campaign for the Democratic nomination and the presidency back to Portland today. The self-styled Democratic Socialist was introduced by Dandy Warhol's keyboardist and local activist Zia McCabe. She gave a warm welcome to the Democratic hopeful and says his message has cemented her involvement in the political process. Some 20,000 local supporters got in to hear Bernie Sanders lambast Hillary Clinton, Wall Street associations, the handling of the Flint water crisis, and the increasing divide between rich and poor. He also laid out his plans for revitalizing the country's crumbling infrastructure. He was briefly upstaged by a bird, which landed on his podium, drawing laughter from the senator as well as the enthusiastic crowd. Sanders says it was a sign. KBOO's Joe Meyer spoke to some of the many thousands outside the venue who didn't get in.
We waited in line earlier, but we have water bottles and snacks, so we can't go inside.
Umbrellas can't go in, signs, lighters, food and drink, knives.
So do you go through a scanner or something?
Yeah, there's Secret Service inside. That's who you go through. TSA and Secret Service is who you got to go through to get inside. If they let you in, you're good to go.
No matches. Hey, kids, I'm Joe Meyer with KBOO News. You want to say why you're out here today?
We're just visiting from Maine, and it's amazing to see Bernie getting all this attention.
Are you going to go inside today?
We can't. We're sorry. We tried to. Got a T-shirt.
You got a T-shirt. What's too crowded? Or you can't get in or what?
Oh, no, it's not crowded. We can't get in.
Why can't you get in then?
Well, because he has a jackknife in his pocket.
Yeah. Oh, I'm standing watching the speech outside because I couldn't bring my pipe through the metal detector. I'm an anarchist who actually registered to vote for the first time in this election.
You want to say hi to KBOO? Tell me about it.
Hi, yeah, my name's Sky the Infinite.
Right on, so you registered?
Yeah, I'm registered to vote, but I don't normally because right. I'm an anarchist. Right. But Bernie Sanders is like one of our only hopes, our only choices, really. I don't understand how people don't see that. It's the only rational decision there is.
What's it take for an anarchist to register to vote?
Bernie Sanders, I guess.
Sir?
Donald. I don't think there's a difference between fear, hate, and hope.
Right.
You can't separate the reaction. It's not like chemistry. You can't crack it into constituent parts. We react with fear and with hate and with hope.
Rep, but there's no smoking in the area.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where should I go smoke?
Like I just said, I mean, there's no real options in the primaries as independent, and I didn't really like the other Democratic options, and the Republicans are a joke.
You got any job?
I don't.
So working here would be something.
That would be a good job. I'm not sure you can talk to the guy in the red jacket that looks pretty official, though, I'd say.
Okay, well, thank you. I'll go over there, and thanks for everything. Anyway, I'm God.
Cheers. Have a nice day, John.
My name is God. See, have a good day.
Bye. Why are you out here today?
Spomberg for mayor. Actually, the accountability and transparency in government is the biggest thing. I think that too much of the money in this city is being spent unwisely, and I think that with issues like homelessness and stuff on the forefront, some of the money can be taken from some of the pet projects that go to the personal friends of people on city council and actually go back to the community, and Jesse believes in that, and so... yeah, it's one of the reasons why I'm supporting him today.
And that was KBOO's Joe Meyer speaking to many of the thousands outside the venue who didn't get in. 20,000 approximately did get in to see Bernie Sanders today.
The Willamette River has become temporary home to a drone submarine designed to make unmanned military voyages and attack identified targets. The classified anti-submarine warfare continuous trail unmanned vessel, or ACTUV, has been docked at Portland Spirit Cruisers near the new Tillicum Crossing. Local company Vigor Industrial is connected to the project, but remains tight-lipped over the extent of its role. 2 years ago, Vigor absorbed Oregon Ironworks, which has a history of involvement in secret military contracts. The area's rivers have long been used for testing of military vessels and subs, with locals often catching fleeting glimpses of the high-tech hardware as it speeds past. The government-run Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, has confirmed ocean-going trials of the prototype drone will go ahead in the spring. Anti-war groups have criticized the increasing use of unmanned military hardware in conflict zones.
As President Barack Obama's tenure nears its end, he circled back to an early promise with a plan to shut down the Guantanamo Bay prison camp. This week, that plan got significant pushback on two fronts, from Republicans in the House of Representatives and from Cuban President Raul Castro. FSRN's Tanya Snyder has more.
So this is what it sounds like when you hold a hearing on closing a prison the day after a terrorist attack.
So the innocent people who are going to lose their lives because of this, they're just part of the equation.
That's California Republican Dana Rohrabacher. He mocked President Obama's assertion that the continued operation of the prison creates conflicts with American allies.
Let me suggest that that attitude of our European friends may well be changing in the next 6 months or so when they realize that the slaughter that's taking place in Paris and now in Brussels is part of an international movement to destroy Western civilization and replace it with a caliphate.
That argument carries a lot of weight with Republicans and some Democrats who are concerned that civilian justice isn't robust enough for the kinds of people detained at Guantanamo, except for one thing.
The continued maintenance of the facility at Guantanamo Bay did not prevent either of those attacks.
That's Lee Woloski, who heads the State Department's program on closing Guantanamo.
There are unfortunately going to be acts of terrorism, probably whether the facility is opened or closed. The proper analysis is what are the risks of keeping it open in light of the very obvious use of that facility as a propaganda tool.
At a House committee hearing on the prison closure plan Wednesday, Woloski had several volleys with Republicans over re-engagement or the number of detainees released from Guantanamo who have gone back to the battlefield. Republicans say as many as 31% have returned to violence. Woloski said that's an outdated figure, and it was only that high if you included unconfirmed cases. Now that number is shrinking dramatically, evidence, he says, that new security procedures are working.
The actual numbers are, in this administration, 7 confirmed re-engagement former detainees. In the previous administration, 111. 7 in this administration out of 144 transferred. That translates into 4.9%. The number for the previous administration is 111 out of 532, which translates into 20.9%.
The most controversial element of President Obama's plan to close the prison at Guantanamo is the proposal to house some detainees in supermax prisons in the United States, which the House preemptively banned. About 800 prisoners have gone through Guantanamo, and the vast majority have already been released, most of them under President Bush. Only 91 people remain, and 35 of them have been approved for transfer to other countries. Some of the remaining detainees are still under review as the military commissions try to figure out what to do with them. Lawmakers who insist on military tribunals and military prisons seem to believe that U.S. civilian law is too soft. But Representative Jerry Connolly of Virginia says a terrorist who killed 2 CIA employees in 1993 was convicted in Virginia and executed.
Somehow our system of justice worked. Not on Cuban soil, on Virginian soil. We could handle a terrorist and did.
As lawmakers considered the president's plan to shutter the controversial facility, Obama was in Cuba this week, making inroads on the warming relationship with President Raul Castro, who made clear how he feels about the entire facility at Guantanamo Bay.
También será necesario.
In order to move forward toward normalization, he said, it will be necessary to return the territory illegally occupied by the Guantanamo naval base. President Obama didn't mention the prison the whole time he was in Cuba, despite provocations like that one. Had he done so, he may have compromised his moral high ground regarding human rights in Cuba, given the murky U.S. record with respect to Guantanamo. But Obama did say this.
I affirm that Cuba's destiny will not be decided by the United States or any other nation. Cuba is sovereign and rightly has great pride. And the future of Cuba will be decided by Cubans, not by anybody else.
In the interests of Cuban sovereignty, President Castro isn't just demanding that the prison at Guantanamo be closed. He wants the entire base shuttered and the land returned to Cuba. President Obama has said he has no intention of doing that. Tanya Snyder, FSRN in Washington.
Reports have surfaced about a police incident in New York City in which a young black letter carrier with the U.S. Postal Service was arrested and charged with disorderly conduct in Crown Heights. On Tuesday, Crown Heights Borough President Eric L. Adams released video of the incident, which showed four undercover police officers arresting the mailman as he's trying to deliver a package at a doorstep. Gray says he shouted at the unmarked car after it almost ran him down as it sped around a corner. He did not know the driver and passengers were all police officers. The video's audio indicates an increasingly hostile crowd gathered around the police as they handcuff the postal carrier and take him away. Borough President Adams is himself a former police officer. He expressed outrage at the officer's arrest of Glenn Grays, who did not resist as he was searched and dragged away, even though the officers are heard saying, "Stop resisting." Gray's postal truck was left open and unlocked in the street. Gray says he was injured when the police officer driving him to the jail ran into another vehicle as he turned to taunt the postal worker. Gray's fiancée is reportedly a New York City police officer herself, who he met while delivering mail on his route. The New York City police say Gray's arrest and injury are, quote, under internal review.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after the news for Counterspin. That'll be followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is rainy with highs near 60 degrees. Today in history, in 1955, the U.S. Customs Department confiscated more than 500 copies of Allen Ginsberg's book Howl, printed in England. Officials alleged that the book was obscene. City Lights, a publishing company and bookstore in San Francisco owned by poet Lawrence Ferlinghetti, published the book the following year. The quote of the day is from Allen Ginsberg, who said, quote, "I never dreamed the sea so deep, the earth so dark. So long, my sleep. I have become another child. I wake to see the world so wild." End quote.
In the past year, Oklahoma had more than 900 earthquakes. That's up from only 3 quakes in 2007, before the dramatic increase in fracking. The Oklahoma Geological Survey says that it now considers it very likely that many of the earthquakes in Oklahoma were caused by the injection of produced water at disposal wells as a byproduct of fracking. Last month, the Sierra Club and Public Justice filed a lawsuit against 3 energy companies, saying they've contributed to the huge upsurge in earthquakes in the state. Though most of the quakes have been 3 point or less on the Richter scale, residents have started to worry about a big one damaging their homes and even hurting their livelihoods. Some say that in a state economy built on oil and gas, ongoing fracking-related earthquakes could kill the golden goose. FSRN's Larry Buell has more from Oklahoma City.
In Oklahoma, the influence of oil and gas is everywhere. It's not uncommon to see pump jacks in residential neighborhoods. There's even an active oil rig on the Capitol grounds. People are used to the dominance of oil and gas. They're even used to the threat of tornadoes in the spring. What they're not used to is earthquakes. But in recent years, Oklahoma has become the most seismically active state in the lower 48. Now that quakes are hitting densely populated areas, Oklahomans are starting to question their state's lax regulatory environment that's allowed fracking companies of all sizes to set up operations anywhere, like near a fault line.
We wonder who is protecting us. Not the governor.
No.
Not the legislature.
No.
Not the OCC.
No.
That's anti-fracking activist Angela Spotts in a rally captured by documentary filmmaker Taylor Mullins.
What happens when the big quake hits? I don't think people understand across this state how gripping that's going to be if a big one hits. And I think it's coming because we're not doing anything to stop it. We don't have contingency plans in place, and we have been warned.
Hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, injects chemical-laced water under high pressure underground to loosen shale rock and release natural gas. As a part of the process, wastewater is forced back into the ground into deep disposal wells. That can act like a lubricant, making the ground shift. After years of denying it, state officials now acknowledge the link between the injection of fracking wastewater into disposal wells and Oklahoma's surge in earthquake activity. But there's no agreement on what to do about it. In 2014, New York banned all hydraulic fracturing in the state. Pennsylvania has issued tougher regulations on fracking operations. Vermont banned fracking in 2012, mostly due to the fear of chemicals leaching into groundwater. And cities across the country have outlawed the practice. But last year, Oklahoma passed a law prohibiting cities from banning fracking operations. Texas also instituted a similar ban last year after residents of Denton, the birthplace of fracking, voted to ban the practice in a local ballot initiative. Still, some Oklahomans are demanding stronger oversight. Ariel Ross is a visiting professor of English at Oklahoma State University in Stillwater. She's active in the group Stop Fracking Payne County.
You know, we want to make sure everyone is protected from the earthquakes. We feel that the safest way to do that is to place a moratorium on wastewater injection until the situation is much more clearly understood.
Oklahoma's buildings were not designed with seismic activity in mind, especially not the kind that the state is currently experiencing. Property owners who want to retrofit their structures are on their own, and unless they have earthquake coverage and have catastrophic damage, they'll be paying out of pocket. And if the wastewater injection continues triggering quakes, the entire state could be at risk. A 2015 report from Standard & Poor's Rating Services said quakes in Oklahoma and in other states with man-made seismicity linked to oil and gas production will have sharp economic consequences on real estate investment, property values, and job growth. State Representative Corey Williams criticizes lawmakers and the oil and gas industry for not taking adequate preventative measures.
I think that when we have a seismic event that actually causes a significant amount of damage, that will be the tipping point where the industry has kind of harmed itself and public opinion really starts to turn against it.
Williams says there are solutions short of an outright fracking ban, but even those ideas are meeting resistance from industry and legislators.
We could be putting in place a tax credit associated with processing wastewater and recycling wastewater right now. It would have a minimal impact on the state. It allows us to work out the kinks at a good time. We'd be recycling our actually most precious resource, water, and we could roll off the horizontal drilling tax credit, which is no longer needed. We don't need to incentivize that technology, but we just don't really seem to have the political courage to do those things in the state right now.
In 2015, the Oklahoma Corporation Commission, that's the state oil and gas regulator, said it would shut down fracking near the epicenter of any earthquake of 4.0 or above, but only after the second 4.0 quake occurs. That's happened once. But most of the quakes are below 4.0, and some worry that those will have a cumulative effect on structures. Tamara Mix is a professor of environmental sociology and social psychology at Oklahoma State University. Even when the ground isn't shaking, she's reminded of fracking. That's because after she bought her house, a fracking company started drilling just across her property line.
People are not familiar with the nature of the risk. We prepare for tornadoes, but we do not prepare for earthquakes. We prepare for wildfires, but we do not prepare for earthquakes. And so in terms of the hazard risks that are going on here, the stress levels become very significant and they manifest in different ways here because of the unprecedented nature and the quick increase in which this has happened.
Oklahomans shaken up by quakes can swing between fatalism, anger, fear, and gallows humor. Ariel Ross keeps a bowl of brick fragments that have fallen off her walls.
I don't know why I keep it. I think just as sort of a physical reminder that while I don't necessarily feel endangered here, probably I am. I think we really all are in various ways.
Larry Buell, FSRN, Oklahoma City.
The governor of Maryland is expected to sign legislation outlawing pesticides that kill bees. If signed into law, consumers would no longer be able to buy knockout ready-to-use grub killer, ortho bug be gone, all-in-one rose and flower care, and any other neonicotinoid on the market shelves. The legislation was supported by both Democrats and Republicans in a state where farmers have lost an estimated 60% of their colonies in the past year. This means Maryland has the highest rate of loss of any state, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Brazil is currently reeling from political and economic crises that have left the country shaken and polarized. A two-year corruption investigation into a kickback scheme at the state oil company Petrobras is coming to a head, having already ensnared dozens of the country's business and political elites. However, many charge that the investigation is biased and politically motivated, and that protests are split along class lines. From Sao Paulo, FSRN's Sam Cowie reports.
Jamais renunciarei.
Speaking live to a news scene and broadcast on national television on Tuesday, Brazil's president Dilma Rousseff said that she would never stand down. A crowd cheered, "There will not be a coup." Brazil's current political crisis is highly complex. Broadly speaking, the country is split into two camps: those who are for and those who are against Rousseff's impeachment. On Avenida Paulista, Sao Paulo's main thoroughfare, pro-impeachment supporters are camped out in front of the headquarters of the Federation of Industries of Sao Paulo, or FIESP, an association of mostly private industrial interests. The organization has declared itself in favor of Rousseff's impeachment because of a proposed tax increase. Ricardo Horki, who owns a key-cutting business in Sao Paulo, is in favor of impeachment and military intervention if necessary. He said he fears that if Rousseff is ousted, there may be some kind of counter-coup attempt by government supporters, making comparisons with Venezuela in 2002.
Today, the left wing is the same as in 1964, when they wanted to implement communism here, similar to what Fidel Castro did in Cuba. Now, they want Brazil to be like Venezuela, communism with a capitalist facade. In reality, it's just robbery. Not capitalism nor communism, just robbery.
Rousseff is facing impeachment for allegedly mismanaging federal budgets. Her supporters point out that the impeachment charge is led by lower house speaker Eduardo Cunha, himself facing graft charges. Those against impeachment also maintain that democracy in Brazil is under threat and say it's illegal and unconstitutional to impeach a president who hasn't committed a crime. The country has recently seen huge pro- and anti-impeachment protests. Surveys show that the majority of pro-impeachment protesters were whiter, wealthier, and more educated than the average Brazilian, earning scorns of elitism from anti-impeachment supporters. One of those at the anti-impeachment protest was Marina Tavares, a 20-year-old public management student at the University of Sao Paulo. Tavares says that she is not necessarily in favor of Rousseff's government, but is totally against the impeachment process, calling it dangerous for democracy.
There is a lot to lose with an impeachment. First of all, our economic situation could get even worse, as the outside world could see us in an unfavorable light and end trade agreements with us. Secondly, when the right wing controls the country, the marginalized social groups suffer. But perhaps worst of all is that this impeachment could kickstart a series of anti-democratic actions across the world. This is my worst fear.
Pro-impeachment protesters first began camping outside of the FIESP building after a series of wiretaps of conversations between Rousseff and her mentor, former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, were leaked to the media. Silva had just accepted a cabinet position in Rousseff's government under the pretext that the popular former president would shore up support in the flailing administration. Silva's ministerial position would also help shield him from arrest in the encroaching corruption investigation, Operation Car Wash, that so far has ensnared many of Brazil's top politicians and business elites. Silva denies all wrongdoing and says the investigations against him are politically motivated, an attempt to tarnish his reputation before he supposedly runs for president again in 2018. Critics said that leaking wiretap conversations to the public was a grave violation of Brazil's constitution and that Sergio Moro, The judge in charge of the Petrobras corruption investigation, who released the wiretaps to the media, should face charges.
Nós sabemos que a Constituição Federal de 1988...
Addressing the press in São Paulo, Brazil's Attorney General, José Eduardo Cardoso, called the leaking of the wiretaps irresponsible and unconstitutional. I cannot think of any country where leaking a conversation of the head of state to the press would be considered acceptable, he said, before adding that such actions have potential to undermine national security. Houssefi, a former leftist guerrilla who was tortured under the military dictatorship, is standing strong, insisting that she will never give up. In a press conference held Thursday for international journalists, she said, I am not a weak woman. Brazil's political climate has cooled slightly for now after an explosive 2 weeks. The next crucial test will be to see if the controversial and scandal-plagued Brazilian Democratic Movement Party, Brazil's biggest political party, will decide to stay or split with the ruling coalition during a party meeting on the 29th of March. Sam Cowie for FSRN, São Paulo, Brazil.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jenna Yokoyama, Les Hudson, and Jeff Henderson. The producer is Lisa Loving. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Les Hudson. Coming up on Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on More Talk, radio hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott speak with Ned Roche about the recommendations of Portland's socially responsible